Everybody coming? Everybody, we're behind. I know. I apologize, but we have some very important guests. I don't want to hog up any more of the time they're giving to us than is necessary. You guys might not have noticed this, but a gentleman was sitting back in the back listening to our last presentation or two. There's this guy, and when I was a little tiny person, I started at KCCI television here in Des Moines, is something called a pissant, which is the lowest of the low. I was 19 years old, and I started that job, and then a couple years later, a director position came open at the station, which turned the volume down, and I tried for it, even though I'd never directed a newscast before. And sent it a tape, and they gave me a test directing night, and that night was the farm train. So trains full of, in the farm crisis, trains full of people from Iowa, farmers, all went to Washington. And they also went by truck and everything, so their packages, which shouldn't be longer than a minute 15, they were like 3 minutes long, and there were like four of them. And the guy who was anchoring that night either edited them all together or somebody did. Long story short, where a baby director who'd never been done a show before should have had a very stressful show, I had like 9 minutes of content all edited together, so I didn't have to do a thing, and I looked real good. I got the job. The first guy down the hall to congratulate the first woman newscast director in the Midwest and one of the youngest ever at 21 was here, this guy, Dave Buzik. When I became management at KCCI 20-some years later, the first guy down the hall to come find me and shake my hand and say congratulations was this guy, Dave Buzik. I was there for 26 years, and every step of the way, he was my biggest fan, but we never actually said that to each other, like, you know, like anything like that.
Until now.
Well, until now. And also, he taught me how to be a leader and how to be a manager, because you get promoted and nobody tells you some of the hard stuff. Anyway, he led KCCI, highest rated news 10 p.m. newscast in the Northern Hemisphere for many, many years. He was also head of the Iowa Broadcast News Association, probably in and out of that for 1,000 years, but the National Radio Television News Directors Association for how many years?
Chairman took us about 2 years.
Okay, but anyway, he's not just a guy. He's been a very big force, not only for television here in Des Moines and Central Iowa, but also throughout the country. He's a big stick, but I'm mostly proud to call him one of our newest IRIS volunteer readers every Friday morning. And also even more proud to call him my friend. So Dave Buzik is here, and he will introduce another friend, Carol Hunter, publisher of the Des Moines Register, which is like right down there, and it's a super cool paper too, but I'm going to shut up. Bye.
Thank you, Mary. That's very kind of you, and normally you do a wonderful job. However, you've given me 30 seconds notice that I'm to introduce Carol, so I'm completely unprepared.
You're fine.
Other than Carol Hunter is the executive editor of the Des Moines Register. So we're not just talking an editor here, we're talking an executive editor in a very tough business or a very big company. Carol has been there for a long time. We've worked together on a lot of projects together, the station and the newspaper, primarily on putting together political debates. And we do them together, and I think the power of KCCI and the power of the Register did a good job. Probably our main claim to fame was November of 2015, when we were able to, the Iowa caucuses start here, we were able to put together one of the Democratic presidential debates. It was held at Drake University here. At that time, it was Hillary Clinton, a guy named Bernie, and Marty O'Malley from Maryland. And it was broadcast live on CBS that night in prime time, Saturday night, but still on prime time. And so that was really cool. I know, Carol, you're from Kansas originally. Did you go to KU?
Yes.
Okay.
Other
than that, she's a fine person. And You should know that Carol tripped on her way over here and is sitting with her foot up on a bag of ice. So it needs to be back in the newsroom in about a half an hour. Right? Okay, so I'm going to shut up and turn it over to Carol. I wish that I had been better prepared. Carol Hunter.
Well, I will tell you that the very first professional baseball game I ever saw was the St. Louis Cardinals. very happy to be here. I'll keep this pretty informal and try to leave lots of time for questions. And if, as I'm babbling in this first part, if you have a question, just shout it out. I'm going to take you to the dark side first. About the future of newspapers, but I promise I'll end up with some hope. The dark side is not an unrealistic thought that in future years there would be no general interest local newspapers and regional newspapers like the Register, for whom I've had the great honor of working for the past 17 years. Iowa is one of those states that has a very rich tradition of local newspapers. About any town of a couple of thousand people has at least a weekly, and some of them dailies. And that just gives you such a rich snapshot of life in a place. Were that to happen, this loss would be a detriment to our communities and our democracy. Because that reporter who served as a watchdog on the city council, the school board, and police department wouldn't be working. And without that local reporter, stories won't get written that make up what I call the threads of community cohesion. That the business down the street is expanding, and that there's a fundraiser plan for someone in the community who was injured in a car crash, or that the community theater is staging a play this weekend, or that a coworker's daughter is tearing up the basketball court on the high school team. The problem is that providers of local journalism, your local newspaper and your local television and radio stations, have worked on the business model of serving a mass audience. And for newspapers, that provided some revenue from subscriptions, but also a lot more revenue from advertisers who wanted to meet that mass audience. But that mass audience in many ways is evaporating. Some of it is because there's so many places for people to get news these days. I mean, when you think about it, most people get news from the palm of their hands. And I think it's a wonderful thing that I can pick up my iPhone and look at the New York Times site and find out the latest from Ukraine. Or you can use it to look at the theater's, that local theater's Facebook page, or get an email newsletter sent directly to patrons. You're interested in a political candidate, if you sign in just once at one of their events, or go online, they'll snag you forever and pester you for mostly dollars, and give what they say is their version of news. The other major factor undermining mass audience is the increasing tribalism of our society. An outright distrust of media, no matter our diligent efforts to seek the truth objectively without partisan bias. Now, I have tremendous respect for many journalists who work in kind of a pseudo-world of part commentary and part news. Here locally, we have a woman who runs her, largely herself, a website called Leading Heartland. And she does a lot of original reporting, but it's all through a partisan and left-wing progressive lens. Then there's something called the Iowa Standard, and they report through a Republican and more conservative lens. The trouble in my mind is that many people these days go right to the medium that meets their comfort zone and offers the talking points that they agree with. They skip right over the media like the local television station or the newspaper that offer objective journalism. Or take the partisans leaning out of that equation. There's a proliferation of objective news organizations that target a very specific audience. And then they slice off just one more little part of that mass audience. You're going to hear later today or tomorrow on your program from Kathy Obradovich. She runs a site called Iowa Capital Dispatch. Kathy's tremendous journalist. I worked with her for a number of years. But her audience is very much a political and government audience. Now, I can't beef too much about Kathy's business model, because for her organization offers up content for free to other publishers. So that's a great deal. But then there are other sites like Axios. I don't know if any of you have Axios newsletters in your markets. They're largely, they have two, their model is two reporters. And otherwise, they call it curating news. You know, basically, they take the headlines from KCCI, take the headlines from the Des Moines Register, and other mass news sites. And that's about two-thirds of their content. And then, in my mind, they have the audacity of trumpeting themselves as a local news site. Once again, taking off just a little slice of audience from more general interest publications. The dark side view is that there's just not enough mass market left to support a general interest newspaper with reporters covering the local council and the business community and arts and sports, and that the relentless shrinkage of news staffs will continue. When I walked in the door 17 years ago, the Register staff was about three times the size it is now.
That's newsroom staff.
Now, it's still by far the largest newsroom staff of 55 journalists in Iowa, but it was north of 175 when I walked in the door. And I think we're a lot better off than the smaller dailies and weeklies, and I think they're most at risk. So that's the real dark side. Now, if I haven't depressed you too much, I'll give you the flip side, and that is I'm more hopeful, especially about regional papers or state papers like the Register, than I have been in a few years. And a lot of that is about because of the subscription model. We now wall off about 20% of our content for subscribers only, and as a way to push people to actually paying for our journalism. And it's a model that's worked very, very well for national papers, particularly the New York Times, and to a lesser extent, the Washington Post. But we're seeing great success with it, too. And one nice thing about it is it's really pushed us to say, what is our best journalism that would prompt people to subscribe? And it's our in-depth beat reporting on things like agricultural, health, and the environment, and education. It's our consistent coverage of local and college sports. It's our business reporting that goes statewide. And it's even some of our commentary as well. We still cover the local news of the day on car crashes and fires, and a basic initial story that anyone can access on, a key vote by the city council. But on major stories, we'll do that short story that gives you the basics. Then we'll do step-back, in-depth reporting to really explain the impact or how a vote came about. And we've seen that people are willing to pay for that. I truly believe that the subscription model will be our pillar of financial stability. But other tactics will help. You'll see media companies work to diversify their revenue streams beyond the traditional subscription and advertising model. One way is events. Here in Iowa, we have something called the Register's Annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa. It's in its 49th year. We'll celebrate 50th next year. And frankly, it started with a couple of riders who wanted to get out of the office for a week, and they invited Iowans to come along. But it has morphed into a real moneymaker because we have beer sponsors now. But other events like, say, auto shows, we even do a sports awards. We do something called Storytellers, where our riders coach people to give oral, honest oral, you know, personal stories about themselves, and those have been really popular. Another diversification of services on the advertising side where our workforce has transformed from selling the Des Moines Register advertising to, in essence, providing agency-level advertising and marketing services to clients, helping guide them in smart strategies to reach their desired audience, not only through advertising on Register platforms, but through search and social media, whatever medium would work best for them. We also need to be more nimble about using the digital technology and platforms that our competitors are exploiting. We need to serve audiences where they are on the platforms they want to use, with news delivered in a format that appeals to them. We already offer 14 email newsletters targeting specific audiences. You know, I can see their appeal. It's pretty easy peasy to just kind of skim through headlines and then click on the ones you're interested in. You're going to see the Register do more of that in the coming year. And if Axios has kind of found a winning formula on kind of short bite news, well, then we need to out-Axios Axios. You'll see us greatly step up our offerings on other platforms like Instagram, doing a lot more there, maybe even TikTok. New podcasts are also a possibility. Already our sports writers appear regularly on radio shows. Those are then turned into a podcast and are among the most popular of the newspaper's podcasts. So I'm bullish on the future of the Register and other sizable legacy publishers to continue serving as that watchdog on local public accountability and being that building block of community cohesion. I do have more concerns about smaller publications. I think they have a harder row, but I see some glimmers of hope. So thank you, and I'll be happy to take questions later.
Thank you, Carol. First of all, it's good to be with you today. Hello. Welcome to Des Moines, where the weather's always like this. You're going to call up the clip, right?
Yeah.
I know you're all over it.
So
I'm a broadcast guy, but in preparation for this, I did look up a few numbers because I really strongly believe that every community needs a great newspaper. I think it's very important. Thank you. Very important for democracy, very important for our community. So here's the situation in the U.S. Daily newspaper circulation in the United States peaked at around 63 million back in the 1970s and stayed there through the 80s. In 2020, the last full year for which Pew released numbers, it had fallen to 24 million. That's from 63 million to 24 million. And that is a 6% decline from the year prior. Journalist jobs at U.S. newspapers had just as rapid of a fall, from 72 million in 2008 and fell to 31 million in 2020. 72 million to 31 million. So more than half of newspaper journalist jobs in this country have disappeared. And at the Register, it's two-thirds, right? Two-thirds. So that is crazy. It's interesting being here today, because I think that what happened in the news last night in this community shines a light on some of what's happening in the business. If you're aware, there was a guy with a gun who went, Ames is a community 30 miles north of here on I-35. He shows up at the parking lot of the church at about 6:45 at night, shoots and kills two young women, and then takes his own life. Pretty big story, particularly in light of all the other shootings happening around the country. You open the Des Moines Register print edition this morning, there's not a word about it because it happened after their deadline. That's not Carol's fault. That's corporate mandated deadlines on when things go to print. Now you can get the information on the app and all that. And I'm not just picking up on the Register or on Carol, because I'm a former news director, sat down and watched my station last night, and our coverage was horrible. Absolutely terrible. There was not a lot of details, and they took 10 to 15 minutes to tell you how there were no details. And it went on and on and on, stumbled around and went back for an update. And of course, there was no news to begin with.
It was good when we were there, Dave.
Well, we would have done better than that. So, you know, I think that what that shines a light on is, print edition is becoming less and less vital to American newspaper companies. And in our case, it really speaks to quality people, being able to find and retain quality people. And I'm not dissing the people who were on the air last night, but they were at an experience level that if we'd had some more experienced people there, I think we would have had a whole bunch of coverage. So what's happening in TV news is obviously the economics are changing for us. We're probably behind where newspapers were because newspapers had so much revenue tied up in classified advertising. Revenue is not what it was in television business either. It's still pretty darn good. But what's really affected us is the Great Resignation that you all are hearing about in your families and your friends and your communities. It's affected journalism as well. I retired 3 years ago after running the newsroom at KCCI for 30 years, and even near the end of my time there, it was getting increasingly difficult to find and retain good people. Where were they going? They were going for better opportunities and better pay. Journalism is not a place to become wealthy, as you probably know. Nonprofit work is not a place to become wealthy either. I'll grant you that. But where are people going? Some of them were going to nonprofits, like big nonprofits, like the Red Cross or something like that. Why? Because they get better pay, and they get better hours, and they don't have to stand by the side of the interstate during a blizzard and tell everybody that it's really snowing. So what I was running up against is just people I loved and I worked so hard to find, and they were great people in the newsroom, great team players, wonderful, deeply talented journalists, and then they would leave and go off into private business or become a public information officer for a city or a school board. And, you know, why is that? I mean, they would work 10 years, have a good career going, but then they would get married, and despite my advice, would go have children, you know? Which, it's like, no, don't do that, because, and then it gets really, really hard. So people want to be home at night and on weekends. Our current morning anchor is a wonderful person, female. She's got two little kids, one a newborn. She gets up every weekday morning at 2:30 in the morning to do her hair, get dressed, put her makeup on, get down to the station, pre-read her stories, and get on the air with a cup of coffee and be perky starting at 4:30 a.m. That's hard to do for anybody, plus with two little kids. So, you know, I get it. People want to be home at Christmas. So there's a big discussion going on in TV news circles on all of our websites now about how owners have to pay better, they got to treat staff members better, understand the stress that we're under as we witness terrible things out on the street. Carol had a reporter covering the racial unrest of 2020 get handcuffed, maced in the face, and stuffed in a van, a police van, taken downtown, booked, and the prosecutor charged her because she didn't disperse when a cop told her to, and it went to trial. And I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars you had to spend. I'm sure it was multiple for a jury verdict that was out 45 minutes. Now, you know, the jury never bought it. Unfortunately, they didn't say it was because she was a journalist there doing her job and had every right to be there. They just said the prosecutor didn't prove the case. So anyway, there's a lot of discussion about we've got to do a better job. And here's a clip you may have seen before from a few months ago. Young female reporter was out in the dark doing a live shot by herself, meaning that she set up the camera. She established a live signal back to the station. She ran around in front of the camera, and here's what happened.
It played out on live television. Tori Morgue, a reporter for WSAZ, that's the NBC affiliate in Huntington, West Virginia. She was about to do a live report when she was accidentally hit by a car. Take a look.
Unfortunately, in freeze thaw, we see this. Water main breaks.
I'm okay. Yeah, you know, that's live TV for you. It's all good. I actually got hit by a car in college, too, just like that.
Wow. Second time getting hit by a car.
Mary, if you were in the control room, you wouldn't have kept that moat anchor on the air.
No, I wouldn't have kept that shot on the air.
Get off. So, and then she says, that's okay, I got hit by a car in college, too. So it's an annual occurrence. What is she doing out there by herself in the dark? You know, at KCCI, we were lucky we never did that. Reporters and photographers work together. But this is what's happening. They're making a young person go out and stand in the dark and do this because they don't have the staffing levels to get her some help. Photographers should be looking out for the reporter looking out for the photographer. So what's happening now is that you know, the career path used to be you graduate from college, you get an internship, you start in a small market, move to a medium market, move to a larger market, get more money, more responsibility. But what's happening is so many people are leaving the business that the large markets, meaning Minneapolis, Chicago, Denver, they're now hiring kids right out of school before they're ready. And they're making mistakes on the air. And because they're taking the best kids out of school for medium, the Des Moines medium market, for medium market stations, small market stations, they're getting kids way down the list, or they're not getting anybody at all. So what does this all mean for you? Well, I'll say one other thing about this, and that is that owners used to get away with paying crap because of the, you know, glamour of being on TV. Well, you know, the bloom is off the rose. We have three kids in their 30s, and they grew up in a household with two newspapers. We talked news events around the dinner table. We watched newscasts at night. They will never write a subscription to a paid subscription to a newspaper. They wouldn't watch a TV newscast at Knife Point. So, you know, it's just a different world out there. So kids coming out of college today, yeah, make me work Christmas morning for terrible pay to be on TV that no one's watching? No. So we got a problem, and corporate owners have to figure that out. So what does that mean for this group? The business is obviously changing. I think that there's less local coverage in the local newspaper. There's less good quality local coverage on television. And I think that you all probably got to broaden your, you know, what you're taking. At Iris, we're still pretty much reading local newspapers. Register's at 9 o'clock, the Fort Dodge Messenger's here, the Dubuque Telegraph Herald is here. And is that the wisest way for us to do it? Or should we be reading what's in the Register and grabbing what's on Iowa Capital Dispatch and Axios and KCCI and figuring that all out? So it's probably not all new to you because you guys depend on local media, but I think it's a crisis for our industry. I think it's a crisis for our country. And the other thing that's happening is that we catch, our staffs catch so much grief from a political standpoint now. Everybody comes to work trying to do the best job they can to be fair, and it just sort of doesn't matter. Readers and viewers are going to hear what they want to hear and read what they want to read and just assume the worst about those of us who are in journalism, whether the story was fair or not. And that gets increasingly difficult. Okay, so solutions. Carol's mentioned a few. There are a few sugar daddies out there. Jeff Bezos has more money than God, but the Washington Post and his staff got, and it's a tremendous newspaper. They've really beefed up their coverage and their digital coverage. There's a little newspaper in Northwest Iowa, Storm Lake, the most diverse community in Iowa, because there are meatpacking plants there, so they attract a lot of immigrant labor. And these two brothers were on the paper, and they were pretty much dying on the vine, particularly after the recession and after COVID. And this film crew came and made a documentary about these guys' efforts to save the newspaper in this interesting town. And Art Cullen, the editor, was on Fresh Air, a podcast. And some rich dude out in California hears the podcast and calls him and gives him a big pot of money. So believe it or not, there were two newspapers in this town, and he just bought out his competition. So now it's back to a one newspaper town, and he's giving him a bunch of money. So, you know, find some rich dude.
That's what we do every day, Dave.
Well, that's true. That's true. But now we're gonna have to do that. So, I'll stop there.
I will say that how many are a Gannett town, Gannett newspaper? How many pay for your access to that paper? Stop it. The Des Moines Register has been giving us access to their newspaper. Not long ago, they were delivering two copies to our back door every single day. Our delivery person made Iris her first stop, even on a blizzard morning when she was running behind. She knew we needed that damn thing by 9 o'clock so that our readers could start reading. We recently switched to using their e-edition, and we print it out on 11 by 17 paper. My readers won't be ready to use touch screens for the live readings, I don't think, for a while. But, you know, we'll see. Anyway, I've never paid a dime to the Des Moines Register for our access to all of their content. We need to work with Gannett and make sure that those of you that are paying for your subscriptions, we need to get our message to Gannett, first of all. What we do in delivering equal access to their content should be free to us. I think, all in favor? Okay. Carol, in her time, and pretty much everybody before her, has always made IRIS a priority. When we have a problem with the website, getting our e-edition or something, their guy is on it. I don't know why you think we're so important, but you do. And we need to make sure that that's the same feeling in all those towns everywhere. And also I'll say, you know, has anybody else gotten a phone call calling you a pinko liberal for what you just read that someone else wrote? You got that call?
I had the husband of the listener call and say, I'm sending that radio back until you can get live newspapers off that radio. I don't want my life listening to it.
Nice.
I wanted to go rescue her.
And a couple years ago, I got to email Carol. I got it on the phone about being a liberal and, you know, bias and IRIS is crap and we're just one of, you know, whatever, Nancy Pelosi's stooges or something. I emailed Carol and I said, we're journalists. You know? I tried to explain, I don't write it. You know, we just read it no matter what it is. But he wouldn't listen and was just assured that I was, you know, a big liberal jerk or whatever. And I emailed Carol, I'm like, guess what just happened? And she emailed back, congratulations and welcome. So anyway, that's my little thing. These are two really good organizations, KCCI and the Des Moines Register here. We've just been filthy with blessings and riches of having this kind of journalism in this town. But I wanted to make sure that Gannett stations know Gannett Reading Services, we need to, and I'll work on it, we need to find a way that your paper values you as much as the Des Moines Register values IRIS. So I vow to get on that.
So I'll say, you know, go to the editor, if there's an editor, or sometimes several of the smaller markets, there's no real top editor anymore, and you'll have a lead reporter. If there are only three or four reporters, you might just have a lead reporter. Go to someone you know and talk about it. I'm a little afraid that we'll get out and the bean counters will say, you got to pay.
Oh.
We have a question back here.
Gannett.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. It's Penn Street again. I have a question for everybody here, I guess, and I'm fairly new to my position, but I'm curious, does anybody get funding from the newspapers that we are reading? Because we're offering this huge service. I guess I'm a little confused on why they're not paying us or doing some sort of ad. Okay, you're laughing. But that just seems like a no-brainer to me. And if it's a small newspaper, I understand financially maybe they can't, but they could do stuff like run ads for us and help promote, you know, our fundraisers for free. I was just curious.
I mean, from
you're
a
laughing at me, but
from a legal perspective, you couldn't read our content. That would be a violation of copyright to read that much content.
Not with our copyright exemption.
Sorry?
Not with our copyright exemption. Yeah.
We have an exemption.
Ah. Well, good. We'll deal with that later, but we can read whatever we want.
To answer, I'll let Becca jump in with that, but to answer Penn's and my, if we've always done it backwards, nobody has ever asked that. We've always just taken the paper and read it, and nobody really thought about asking them to pay for that.
Why?
Because that's how
you can always turn it on its head.
Yeah, you can always try it. This is Becca Journey with Radio Talking Book Service in Omaha. It wasn't until just like 2 years ago that the Herald stopped charging us $100 and bazillion a year for their paper. So just sharing that little experience.
And they had sugar daddies.
Yeah. Did they have sugar daddies?
They had sugar daddies.
Yeah, Warren Buffett.
Well,
for a while.
Yeah. Right, but I mean, they were still charging us. Oh, that's what I'm saying. It wasn't honestly probably until Lee bought them that we got a free paper.
Yeah. I think the owner could have afforded it.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I wanted to emphasize the bright side, I mean, the Omaha World Herald, within, what was it, 2 months ago, had both its editor and its managing editor just lopped off from the top as a pure payroll move. And the entire league has faced possible takeover of a company that really just runs papers into the ground. So there are still some very big headwinds.
Michael with the Reporting Library of West Texas. I'd like to ask quickly from both of you, Carol and Dave. I did not use my journalism degree, but I admire what you guys do. Could we get like a little brief educational and career background? I know you said you've been with the Register for 17 years. What about before that?
So I went to the University of Kansas School of Journalism and was actually recruited by Gannett out of there. And I'm a real dinosaur in the fact that I've worked for the same company for years. I had four different stops. Started a very small paper in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Wonderful place to start, but it was very small. Then I was on the East Coast for 16 years at a kind of a medium-sized paper. Worked my way up through the ranks. I was a reporter, a copy editor, a news director, news editor, metro editor, managing editor, then became the top editor there. Next went to the Green Bay, Wisconsin Press Gazette, which was fun as the executive editor because there's the Packers. And you get to one of their Super Bowls. I led the away team of 10 reporters for the Super Bowl coverage. Sometimes being the editor, you get to do fun things. And then I was very blessed to be able to come to the Register, which has always just been recognized as a very strong regional paper. And as someone who grew up in the Midwest, probably was also always kind of a destination paper for me. So, it used to be that you really did have to kind of move from market to market, much like television folks. And I think Dave and I were both lucky in order that we were able to stay in communities a little longer. And I think that's important because you need to know your community to do really good reporting.
My story is shorter. I went to a really good journalism school, University of Missouri, and came up to Des Moines for a radio job, did that for 3 years, moved to television, and was a reporter, anchored the 10 o'clock news, co-anchored the 10 o'clock news, and then went into management and was lucky enough to stay there for 30 years. And you know, why did I stay here and not move? Well, I got here, met a girl, started having kids. Don't tell my wife. And, so I have been very lucky to be able to put roots down and make contacts here. It makes you a better journalist when you know people. Thanks for the question.
Amy has a question over here.
Amy from Voice Corps in Columbus, Ohio. I was a newspaper reporter and then a news director at a radio station.
Woo!
So news background before I found my way to Voice Corps in Columbus. And just about the newspapers, ever since Voice Corps turned on in 1975, the Columbus Dispatch, and there was a second paper, a daily, has always given the papers free, a stack every morning. And then, so that's continued to this day when the Dispatch was purchased by Gannett. For a long time, someone who worked at the Dispatch and their marketing was a member of Voice Corps' board, and that relationship also continues. When Gannett bought the Dispatch and we needed online logins for the e-editions, I would just email Eric. He hooked me up with the right person at Gannett. And then my next question a month later was, well, how about a login so I can access every single paper that Gannett owns in the state of Ohio? Okay, here.
Oh,
and
cool.
So they gave it to me. So now, eventually, we can start recording all of those that publish once a week or twice a week. And then all the readers who read at home now because of the pandemic, they all have that same login to the Dispatch, so they can read it online or still read the paper version. A lot of them still subscribe to the paper version. So, but that's a historic relationship. If it's a new one you're trying to forge, you know, tell them that you're serving the community. You know, you want to read to the blind. You know, who's going to say no to that? Someone who has a heart of stone. You have a list. Oh, I'm sorry.
Mike, you're next.
David Carroll, question for you. As you look at what is news or what's not news, has that changed, that definition of what's news, has it changed over the years? And how has it changed? Because with limited resources, I think that's much more of a more difficult decision for a news director or editor these days as it was 10 or 15 years ago.
I'll just answer very briefly that I think it has changed, and I think it has changed for the better. Back when I was a reporter, we just covered government, 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 government. I mean, the Des Moines City Council, whether there was real news on there for people or not, I mean, we covered the Des Moines City Council, we covered the legislature. Now I think there's got to be some issue that we can take from that agenda and go out and do with the community. So I think from that standpoint, we do stories that are a lot more meaningful and impactful. And in our, we have more journalists in the newsroom today than when I started, just because we have more newscasts. You know, when I started, it was like 6 o'clock or 10 o'clock. That was it. Now we're doing 28 hours of news a day, it feels like. So we actually have more journalists, but they're spread more thinly.
My name is Mike. Oh,
sorry.
No,
oh,
go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I would say that there certainly are whole swaths of news that we just do not cover now because of the size of staff. And really, to me, what has been hurt the most is like truly local coverage of like in our area, you know, each suburban town council or each school board. And as a citizen, I really regret that because we will sweep in when we find out that there's been an audit and there's been wrongdoing or something like that. But we're not physically there as much as we used to be. I really do think that our quality, you know, we have some really fine and experienced journalists. And some really green ones too, but I would put them up against the same 55 people from a registered staff from 20 years ago, but there's just not as many of them. So that affects what you can cover.
My name is Mike Duke. I come from Jackson, Mississippi, home of another UNED paper.
Yes.
My agency, Mississippi Authority for Educational Television, hired the executive director away from Gannett about in 2011, a guy named Ronnie Agnew, and he was there, the local head, chief editor, whatever they called him at the time, and he just left us and went to Columbus, Ohio, by the way, to their television system. But by that time, by 2011, I had also been told by the local in that paper that they would no longer give us complimentary issues. It had started out with two issues and it worked down to one. We bought one, they gave us one. Then they started saying, no, we're not gonna give you anything. And I went to him and I said, okay, what's the inside track to restore these contributions? And he said, there really isn't one. Just go ahead and pay for it. So that's what we did. Now, my question for Carol, related to something that Dave said about the coverage last night, or of the event here last night, what is the corporate mandated deadline for, you know, if it happens after X o'clock, it's not going to be in tomorrow's paper?
Well, and I might bristle a little at corporate mandated, because it's about production cost cutting. It's about printing as many papers on a single press as you can. And so in order to do that, you've got to, some of them have to go early. The press here in Des Moines prints the Kansas City Star and the Topeka Capital Journal. It publishes the Cedar Rapids Gazette. We had a hard down electrical problem in the press about 2 months ago, and there just are not presses now in close proximity, and we had to ship electronically, ship plates to Peoria, Illinois, and then truck those copies back here. So there's some really tough logistical difficulties anymore. But if it gets past about 6 o'clock at night, so all your evening sports, all of your town council meetings, all those kind of things, we still cover them. Our reporters are out there just as they always have been, and we'll post that news online, but it's not gonna get it into your print paper. Like the shooting, which started about a little after six, that won't hit the print paper until Friday.
Pro tip, if you're going to commit a crime, wait until about 6:30.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Yvonne Mastromano. I'm from Richmond, Virginia, and Virginia Voice. My question, especially for those who are paying for the newspapers, in many cases, ADA and accessibility is important to some of the folks that we work with, some of the corporations and various sources of information, and you can use that to some extent if there's a competitive market. You know, so-and-so's, they're ADA compliant, or you. But if you have, which in most, many cases, I would say, although you're the experts, but there is just one major newspaper, and like in Richmond, we have the Richmond Times-Dispatch. The only and not really competitive newspapers would be like the Goochland Gazette or the New Kent, whatever that thing is called, Reflector, no, Register. But my point is that if there are no competitors, is there any sort of anything on the agenda for a local newspaper, a large newspaper, to show that they are ADA compliant, to show that they are interested in providing accessibility for people with disabilities? Is that even on their radar in terms of trying to make a case to get free access to their newspapers?
I certainly think that there is great interest on individual newspapers' part and also the company to show that it is doing all it can to accommodate anyone with disabilities. All sorts, you know, like every company these days, we recognize the importance of diversity and equity and inclusion. It just gets down to very practical things, like you might have a pretty junior editor there who just doesn't kind of know how to work the system to get around, you know, how to give you a free copy. You know, there are times when it feels like accountants run the Navy. So I think the best thing to do is try to build a relationship, and then that person, I think, in most cases, will try their best to treat you fairly.
I was just going to, this is Becca again from Omaha. I'm just really going to quickly say that some of our small regional newspapers were more than willing to give us a free subscription if we simply use the online version. It cut out the cost of sending us a physical copy. So that was a route we went with a lot of them.
And I don't know if anybody does this now, but I know in the past some of the services would tell the publisher of the newspaper, we have 1,000 listeners in the Des Moines metro area, and they can count that as their subscribers. Because technically, if you're reading the paper to them, they are still your subscribers. So that might be an in your market, that, hey, we have this many listeners, they are potentially listening to your paper, so your circulation is up by whatever.
I'll go. I'm up.
This is Kim from AINC, Colorado. We, a few years ago, had approached one of the papers in Western Colorado, Grand Junction, which is a large paper for that area, They had stopped publishing 2 days a week because of costs, and we had approached them about providing, you know, we have readers already reading the paper and providing that to them in some type of partnership, and they were really interested at first. We went out and met them, and then it just fizzled. They didn't, you know, return calls. They do their own podcast now, and that's what we're starting to see. These organizations are starting to do their own podcast. You kind of alluded to that on being on different platforms. Do you see that happening? That's certainly something we're starting to think about. If newspapers are providing their own podcasts and being ADA compliant, they're not, you know, people wouldn't necessarily have to rely on us, except for the fact we don't charge our listeners, and I'm sure they're charging for their audio subscriptions.
I think that technology could take things in lots of different directions. I mean, I know now that they're experimenting with some of the Gannett papers, where basically every article, like on a website, would have an audio version. So that may be our future, part of our future. It'll end up being consumer driven, you know, and how people want to access the news. Really, I try to be pretty agnostic about platform, because I'm most interested in people actually being interested in the news and taking time to learn about what's happening at their capital or their local council and that sort of thing. I think that's perhaps the bigger obstacle, is apathy about the news, and in a larger sense, apathy about our state and national futures.
And on that optimistic note.
I just want to do one quick note. Up next, we had, you know, Beyond Newspapers, and then we had Liz Cooney talking about You Have What It Takes. Liz is here. She left the office to come do this with Lisa, Megan's permission. Can we flippy-flop? Okay. So in a second, we're going to take a quick break, and so Liz can get set, and then we'll come back and we'll have Liz, and then after that, we'll do the Beyond Newspapers thing. Quick story. I was going through our database, which I don't maintain like I should, and also I was new, and I came across people, and somebody was 107. And I'm like, no, they're not. But I still, you know, so I Google, and she's alive, and she had sent us $20 2 years ago, so I can't find an obit, so I figure she's alive, and she's in Mason City. So when I was up delivering a radio, I called her, and I stopped by to talk to her, and she's 107, and she's alive, and her name's Helen, and I get a little emotional, but she, in the 40s, she was a social Page's reporter for the Charles City paper up in Northern Iowa. Anyway, her whole family, they all just wanted to be wives, but Helen wanted to be a newspaper reporter. So she did the Social Society pages, and then she was invited to a luncheon at the Des Moines Register, which was probably the Tribune side, whatever. She was invited to Des Moines to attend a women journalist luncheon in the 40s. And this was going to be a big, 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 big trip. And she said, but I didn't go. And I said, well, why didn't you go? And she said, because my monthly demon came. Think about this. In the day, that meant stay home. You know, certainly you can't ride horseback and all that stuff in the commercials, but that meant stay home in the 40s. So she did not go and be among female journalists in the 40s, and she was so pissed about it at 107. So, but she talked about, you know, how much she loved the Register, and she loved Iris, and she had a chair with a special table with her radio and big headphones. She, at 107, she's about this tall. I'm holding my hand just above my waist. She was itsy bitsy. So, and then she said, you know, I love this, I love that, but oh, the political reporting by that lady with the weird name Obadova or something. I said, Kathy Obradovich? And she said, that's the one. She's the most clever girl. So it was a delightful visit with Helen. I'm driving home from Mason City. I call Kathy Obradovich and said, who do I have to kill to have Helen be recognized as a woman journalist, that, you know, 60-some years later? So a couple emails with Kathy Obradovich. She runs it up the flagpole at the Des Moines Register. Fast forward a couple months. It was winter when I met her. It was like April when we met in Helen's parking lot, or her driveway. Mason City is 170 miles north. The Des Moines Register had a trophy made, beautiful, crystal, the first ever reader appreciation something, it had all the words on it. We gathered in Helen's driveway. Helen's daughter, who was 87, knew we were coming. In the door walks Amelie Nash, from Gannett, the Des Moines Register, one of the higher ups, and Kathy Ubaduba. We walked in Helen's door, and Helen grabbed her heart, like, and I thought, crap. Anyway, we killed someone at one of our big band events, but that's a different story. But we sat with Helen, and Kathy and Emily were so gracious with their time. They had other things to do, but they sat with this woman, and then we presented her with the award. I was just part of the furniture for that one. It was all Helen meeting that clever, clever girl who was clever enough to marry our Jim O. But, and the clever girl will be here tomorrow. But then the Register, Emily did a story with a sidebar telling Helen's story about not only being a woman journalist in the 40s when that was rare and everything else, and how she's gotten the first Des Moines Register reader appreciation, all of whatever you guys put on there, she loved it. But she also wove Iris in there and how Helen can continue to be up on current events because of Iris. And so that one who do I have to kill phone call, giving Kathy you know what, if they were going to do the story, any newspaper was going to do that story, 107-year-old woman. Anyway, Helen passed at 109, but she told everyone that that was one of the greatest days of her life when her Des Moines Register reporter hero came to her house. But maybe we shouldn't go after Gannett and tell them that we're not paying you. I think that's good, because I need you to still exist so that I can exist. We're kind of symbiotic that way. But Jim will talk about how to tell your story. Liz will talk about how you do have the tools to communicate that you might not know you have. And then Kathy will be here tomorrow, too. But start wheeling your way in. Come up with a story. Have a relationship with your local paper. Emily had never heard of us. You were new. Or
in that job.
Yeah, new in that job. But just as we are, you know, things are cyclical. And the publisher before might have known all about you and loved you, but there's a new dude now. Or they might have been downsized. But just keep forming and keeping those relationships with your publications. So anyway, Helen, rest her soul, would be so grateful for you guys and your time today. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, please say thank you.